generous support for Coastal Windage comes from. Cameron's Restaurant Pub and Inn, and now RV Park. Cameron's is the only true British pub on the coastside, featuring 19 beers on tap and more than 60 brands of bottles. Come for the food and stay for the fun. Happy hour specials Monday through Friday. Open mic night on Thursday and karaoke on Friday and Saturday. Cameron's Restaurant Pub in Half Moon Bay.
Broadcasting live from the KHMB studios in downtown Half Moon Bay. This is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. The Coastside's own live call-in talk radio show. From Pescadero to Pacifica and beyond, this is the place for Coastside issues, hot topics, and you. And now, the host of Coastal Windage, Mr. Ruben Truthmaker, and his co-host, Crystalyn.
All right, good morning, Coastsiders. It's Friday, February 6th, 2026. It's time for some Coastal Windage. This is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. The Coastside's very own live call-in talk radio show. No Crystalyn today. I'm Ruben, by the way, in case you're just dropping in. I'm Ruben, Truthmaker. No Crystalyn today. She's off opening up a Swiss bank account to stash all of her windage loot. You know, it's a full-time job trying to figure out what to do with all of the excess cash we make off of broadcast radio, in case you're interested in an incredibly lucrative career. Think about it. All right, we're here every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on KHMB Radio, 100.9 FM, rockin', 1710 a.m., and streaming live on khmbradio.com. Coastside issues, hot topics, and you and me. And that's us. And give us a call, okay? We got an amazing guest today, Mike Kahn from Explore Local Nature. Good morning, Mike.
Morning.
All right. Thank you for coming in. We're going to be talking to Mike about his business enterprise that he started. And it involves, I know, brace yourselves, listeners, it involves nature. Yes, we love nature. And AI. What? How can this be? Mike's going to tell us. He's figured it out, okay? And he's going to explain it to me. That should be fun for everybody. You don't want to miss that. Okay, here's our topics for today. Oh, that's right. You can call in if you want to talk to Mike or me, or you've got something on your mind that's Coastside related. 650-560-9851. You guys should have that number memorized already. Today's topic. Oof, let's get sesquicentennial. Let's do it. Let's get sesquicentennial. NIMBY. We're going to try that one again. And Shooting the Breeze, live interview with Mike Kahn, founder and CEO of the Outdoor Recreation app. We're calling it an app for now, Mike, but that's something we're going to explore later. What exactly is it? But Explore Local Nature, that's what you need to know right now when you go and look it up online. Explore Local Nature. Okay, just type that into your browser, and up pops Mike's creation. Well, again, we'll get to the
website app.
Okay, we'll dive deeply into, because even that for me, my confused brain is like, is it a website? Is it an app? Every time I go to Instagram, because somebody sends me an Instagram link, I don't have Instagram. It always asks me, do I want to open the app?
We're a website, so we don't have that full app. You don't have to download something right now, so you don't have to worry about that. You
can loving come, that already.
Come on in.
Okay, good. See, this is why we have Mike on the show. All right, I can feel it already. It's the simpatico. Okay, wow, what a stretch of weather we've been having. Pretty amazing. Reminds me of this happens sometimes in February. I am reminded of the legendary February 8th, 2006. Mavericks surf contest, one of the last surf contests. It was actually a contest with people, and the one day thing or the 24-hour notice. It was like in the 80s that day, just clear, no wind, kind of like we've been having. But often when it's clear and dry in the winter, the air quality goes down. Oh, good segue, Ruben, because here we go with the air quality report. We're the only radio program in the history of radio that brings you the live air quality right now. The air that you're breathing. Okay, the scale 0 to 50, good. 51 to 100, moderate. Today at El Granada, 17. Half Moon Bay, 12, pretty good. Today in Redwood City, 23. In Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz not as good, 36. And then we always give an Easter egg location. Again, we've got the Windage Bucks to give away. Listeners, if you can figure out why this location that I'm about to give is the Easter egg location, and you call in and give that reason, you get Windage Bucks, over $100 from and discounts from 13 local businesses. Today in Palo Alto, California, it's 29. Okay, all below 50, which is all in the incredible range. All right. Today,
I could guess on that one.
All right, so you're already... So Mike has just given a hint that he could figure that one out. So listeners, come on now. These are free Windage Bucks.
Waking you up. Listen. Think about it.
That's right. Come on. He's spoon-feeding it to you. All right. Here's some big news that we are breaking. Again, we're not a news show, but occasionally we get wind of stuff, or we get windage of stuff that other places don't hear about, because we've got our feelers out everywhere. Wednesday night in Burlingame, at Burlingame High School, Half Moon Bay High School history was made. Gio Garduño Martin passed John Parsons as the leading scorer in Half Moon Bay High School men's or boys Half Moon Bay High School basketball history. The leading scorer in the history of the high school, passing John Parsons, the legendary John Parsons, who is the coach there now, who's in the Hall of Fame. Gio now has 1,532 points, passing John's 1,515. Couldn't have happened to a better person. I'm speaking of Gio. I have had a chance to know and coach Gio since he was in fifth grade. Cool. And I tell this story to the sixth graders that I'm coaching now at Cunha. And Gio is returning to the community, what he got from the community. He's helping coach sixth graders at Cunha right now. And we point to him and say, I remember Gio when he was a soccer player in the Half Moon Bay Soccer Club. And he was a pretty good soccer player. And, you know, he plays basketball. And then one summer we came back to CYO, which was usually in the wintertime. We would have a CYO teams here before COVID on the coast side. And everybody was talking about this kid Gio and how amazing he was. And I'm like, wait, Gio the soccer player? Like, oh, my God, he's worked so hard over the summer, and he's incredible now. He's just, you wouldn't believe it. And I was like, well, I'll believe it when I see it. And then I saw it, and I believed it. This kid made himself what he is. The amount of work that he put into it and the amount of dedication is really exemplary and a role modeling of exactly what you want from a son, a ball player, a teammate, a friend. So Gio Garduño Martin, congratulations. And shout out to his mom, Melissa, his grandparents, Perry and Cheryl, his uncle, Perry Jr. These are all, you know, the people in your family, the people in your life help form the person that you are. They're wonderful people. And you can see them at every Half Moon Bay High School game. And Gio's a senior now. He was on that, as a freshman, he was a starter. He was on that team that went to the state championship as a freshman. And now, can you believe it? He's a senior. Next Friday, I think it's the 13th coming up. So this next Friday at home, it's senior night. Come out and celebrate Gio and his senior teammates. I mean, this is, I'm just going to say it, the best player who's ever put on a Half Moon Bay High School uniform. All right. Congratulations, Gio Garduño Martin. Couldn't happen to a better guy. Okay. This is a huge show for us. This is our 350th show, Mike. Can you believe that?
It's awesome. Impressive.
How many guides do you have right now? You have multiple guides that you create for people finding outdoor locations and hikes and stuff. How many guides do you have right now?
This is the first guide.
Okay. I mean, it's the first.
So I have a ways to go to get to 350.
Right. Do you envision a time when you have such a catalog of material?
That would be awesome. I'd love to get there.
Yeah, you will. Okay, good.
You're inspired.
Totally. All right, so we're at our 350th show, which 350, this is our sesquicentennial show or our semi-septcentennial show. What are the words that you are saying, Ruben? Well, sesquicentennial, a modern coin term, is 350 years. And here's how you get there. Here's how you put these pieces together. It relates to being halfway from the third and fourth integer, so 3 and 4 and 3 and 400. Thus, it is a contraction of semis, halfway, and quartus, fourth. Hence, sesquicentennial. Now, there's also another option, semi-septcentennial, which is also a modern coin term, semi-half, sept, 7, times cent, 100, times centennial, 350. Mike, do you have a favorite Latin-derived anniversary term, like everybody else?
Favorite Latin-derived
anniversary term, yes. I mean, come on. Isn't that what's tattooed on your forearm there?
Oh, yeah.
Semi-sesquicentennial or tricentennial or...
Bicentennial is a good one.
Yeah, bicentennial.
That was a big one here.
Yeah, that was fun. Bicentennial was fun. Tricentennial, I remember at the bicentennial, my dad saying, well, enjoy this one because you're probably not going to be around for the tricentennial. I'm like, Dad! He's like, just do the math. Think about it. So he's probably right. You never know. But, yeah, I did enjoy the bicentennial. So this is our 350th show. Ironically and sadly, this is our penultimate show in the venerable Coastal Windage Theater here in the De Benedetti building right here on Main Street. We'll be moving our studio to an undisclosed location for the time being while another facility is custom designed for the Windage experience. I've heard it's going to be a similar concept to the Sphere in Vegas. Mike, have you seen a show at the Sphere?
I haven't seen a show. I've seen it from the outside, and that's cool in and of itself. It's quite an experience.
If you were to be lured to the Sphere by a performer or an act, who would you want to see there?
Oh, put me on the spot. I will go in a time machine. I'm going to see the original Pink Floyd.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's almost like overkill of like, you know, you may not come out of that, you know. You were lost in a trance there.
And we'll take the wall. We'll do
wow.
The wall.
Wow. Okay. Going all the way in and pretty dark, too. Okay. Like, you may come out a different person.
You're
seeing
learning different
the wall
sides
in the
of me
sphere.
Here.
Okay. That's good. Well, that's good. We want to see all sides of you, Mike. Okay. We've done every single one of our 350 episodes here in the studio. There's a lot of memories, a lot of magic, and a lot of pizza boxes. But time does not stand still, not even here on the coast side. So we improvise, we adapt, we overcome, and we move to a different studio. All right, that's what it is. All right, just a note here. Maybe this is even like a community service message. A note on bad driving. Not bad drivers necessarily. So I'm not talking about drivers that are going over the curb or going a million miles an hour cutting people off. Those are bad drivers. I'm talking about bad driving, poor form, weak skills, no road etiquette. Specifically, today, I'm calling out those drivers who lollygag and don't pay attention, looking at their phone during lights, not keeping up with the car in front of them. Yes, maybe it's kind of stop and go, but when you leave 100 feet between you and the car in front of you, it creates a lag all the way down. From Half Moon Bay lights all the way down past the harbor, okay? I see this every morning. People driving like they just have all the time in the world. Da-di-da-di-da-di-da, lackadaisical driving. And, you know, I can hear people right now. Hey, man, what's the rush? Why are you in a hurry? Chill, bro. You'll get there when you get there, Ruben. Hey, bro, you know what? It's the Bay Area and we're all in a hurry. Why are you not? Have a sense of urgency, man. That's what I'm talking about. Have a sense of urgency. You're driving. That's your 100% job. It's not looking at your phone. It's not playing with your huge display and your stupid Tesla car, whatever you've got. Mike, you don't have a Tesla, do you?
I don't. I have a Chevy Bolt EV.
I mean, it's not the electrical part of it that I have the problem with. It's the ownership group at the Tesla thing that I got the problem with. Okay, so
I'll hold my tongue.
Okay, so we can live with that. But pay attention, folks. Mike, are you Mr. Chill when you drive or are you Mr. Shrill?
Oh, I'm really work on being chill.
but you have to work on it?
But I do. I I do come up to the light. I do not leave. I totally get what you're saying. So I want to get there efficiently. We can get better air quality that way too if we're not like spending more on the road or if more people have EVs.
I'll just leave that there because electricity comes from somewhere. But okay. But I hear you.
Yes.
This is what I'm saying to people. When you're driving, look ahead to the next stoplight. If it's green, speed up a little because guess what? It's green. It's going to not be green for very much longer. I see people like the light ahead, especially when we come up to the McDonald's coming southbound on Highway 1, McDonald's. You got a couple lights there. And I see people, they're just lollygagging around 100 feet between the next car in front of them. The light's green and I'm yelling, go! Go, because that light is going to change. And sure enough, like as we're approaching, it turns yellow and we miss the light. And yes, it's 3 or 4 minutes for that light complex to go around and come back to you. But then you've mixed the next one and then you're waiting at the Kelly Street light to turn left on Kelly. And if you miss that one because people are lollygagging in the turn lane and you don't make the turn, that's like a 5 minute light. So yes, when I've allotted 20 minutes to get from El Granada to Cunha and people are lollygagging and we're missing every light, yeah, it's a problem. And all I'm saying is pay attention, keep up. Your job when you're behind the wheel is to drive 100%. That's your job. All right, we'll just leave it at that. Oh, Mike,
how many of those do you think are tourists versus locals?
You can tell tourists in certain locations, like for example in El Granada, if you Obispo Road connects to whatever that is, San Carlos or something, right there at the light, Coronado maybe is the name of the road. So Obispo connects to Coronado right at the light. On crowded weekend days, when Highway 1's crowded, Waze will direct people onto Avenue Alhambra and to Obispo to that light. Mm-hmm. And on weekends, there's no zipper there. People coming down Coronado to the light will not let people from Obispo make the right and merge in there because they're not locals and they don't understand. We're all here together. This is a zipper situation. And so it gets backed up. On weekday mornings like this morning, it's locals and the zipper works perfectly. And those are like indications where you can tell. Also, like the time of the week, right, on Sunday afternoons when people are lollygagging, it's almost 100% tourists, those kinds of things. I would say, in a long-winded answer to your question.
So you're talking to your friends.
Yeah, essentially. I mean, you know, from most of what I'm saying here is, like, I would say it's people that live here on the coast side. Yeah, I get it. It's a beautiful sunset, but pull over and enjoy it. I got places to go. It's Silicon Valley. Everybody's got a million things to do.
Yeah.
I don't have time for this. Okay. NIMBY, let's see. Do we have time for NIMBY? Yeah, sure. Okay. This is semi-related. Okay, let's be NIMBY, right? Everybody's heard this term. I just want to be real clear that people understand my perspective on this topic right now. So let's just be super clear. Listen to the words that I am saying, people. The segment is not a veiled metaphor or an analogy for the current U.S. immigration debate. Coastal Windage fully believes immigrants and immigration are a critical part of this country's past, present, and future. Let's also be clear. I personally and Coastal Windage is sympathetic and supportive of government social aid, including funding for homelessness. This is not a veiled attack on the homeless policies, or government social fundings. Funding. These are strictly personal feelings and observations about life here on the coast side. So, Mike, having said that, I'm going to throw you right into the grinder here, and we'll use you as a test case. When you hear the word NIMBY, what is the first thought that comes to your mind?
Well, just literally, not in my backyard.
Yep.
So that is someone who's here who doesn't want something else or someone else here.
Do you have negative, positive, or neutral thoughts, connotations? Does that word have negative, neutral, or positive connotations for you?
More negative than positive, for sure. But I've been around long enough, seen the issues, local politics, regional, transportation, development, nature, that it gets complex and there's a lot to it. But anyways, there's some interesting stuff going on right now in Pacifica around that.
Absolutely. Totally. And that's a great answer that you gave, because it's not one thing or the other. It's really a nuanced situation that's context dependent. But unfortunately, NIMBY has gone in a certain direction that is not context dependent. Most people have an intrinsically negative feeling about the term. So, as Mike mentioned, the term is used to describe the resistance of communities to the siting of controversial facilities and land use. The term originated in the late 1970s out of the hazardous waste industry. So there's a good indication there of why, of the legacy of this term. It originated out of the hazardous waste industry as a pejorative used by the industry to tar opponents to industrial developments. Probably in the 70s, we're talking about, solid waste disposal sites and nuclear power generating facilities, probably the main two things. So there was a pejorative then, and it's a pejorative now, because quote-unquote NIMBY organizations and policies are now painted as worsening racial segregation, deepening economic inequality, and limiting the overall supply of affordable housing. Here on the coast side, anytime somebody objects to something being built or expanded, they're quickly labeled as a NIMBY as a way of delegitimizing that person's opinion and perspective. Oh, you're a NIMBY. You just want to pull up the gates and you don't want anybody else to have what you have. So whatever you're saying, it can just be completely discounted. Per Mike's great statement earlier about NIMBY, it's really, if we could just all take a step back and take a breath and think about this logically, it's really a case of whose ox is being gored, whether you think something is NIMBY or not. If it's your sight line, if it's your backyard, if it's your air quality, then of course you're going to be in a situation where you don't want that facility or that operation there. Maybe if you're not living there, or you're going to make money off it or something like that, you're for it. Okay, so it's a case of whose ox is being gored. And I would say to folks who throw out the NIMBY term here on the coast side, that development is a cumulative effect. El Granada has transformed significantly since I moved here in 2002. Old timers talk about the dirt streets and the open lots for kids to play and make bike jumps and other playtime activities. And there's always a thing on next door. Kids should just go out and play. Where are they going to play? Because there's literally hardly an open lot left in El Granada. In fact, the biggest one is the 6-acre lot on the north side of town, which the Planning Commission recently voted to rezone for high-density housing. Next week, we're going to have Melinda McNaughton on to talk about the Xerxes Foundation and how that exact site is a documented monarch butterfly overwintering site. But, you know, can't let open property stay open. Gotta build. And if you object to it because it's a monarch butterfly overwintering site, well, you're a NIMBY. Seeing a great blue heron just hanging out in the vacant lot next to the post office in El Granada is a daily joy for me. It brings pleasure and joy to me. And it just saddens me that somebody's just itching to put up a building on that lot. Mike, you mentioned it. Pacifica is about to go through a major, major transformation over the next 10 years that will completely change the nature of the community. So many projects are slated right now or being discussed. Hundreds and hundreds of units on a thread of corridor, Highway 1, that cannot be expanded. What's the feeling in Pacifica there, and are people that are opposed to it being tarred as NIMBYs or defenders of their community?
Well, it's interesting, and I may not have the opinion you think I may have on this, that NIMBY in general, I would say, are the community say no to everything, so it is no development. Don't do anything. Now, the interesting thing is that there's that balance of what we have as a fabric and the culture and what this town is like, but what also trying to look to the future, what the needs are, as well as what the housing rules are that we're being forced or need more housing. So it gets very complex. And we just had a talk. A local citizen brought in someone from Strong Towns, which is a nonprofit that is talking about educating about how to build robust communities that are economically viable but also vibrant. And no growth does not do that, especially on the decades since the 1940s of how we've developed and sprawling out and having all of this infrastructure and then having the government having to pay for that infrastructure. And basically, Pacifica is looking at going broke if we don't do some development and redevelopment. So that basically goes, I'm not completely like, so the NIMBY to me is usually don't do anything in my backyard, so everything stays the same. And that can really, it's really important to try and protect, but also looking to the future of how are we going, are we sustainable in terms of our civic, our government, and paying for all the services and balancing the needs of people who need more affordable there's definitely housing and then there's affordable housing. So I've said a lot.
I mean, and that's why, you know, we have this show to talk these things out. I mean, so 4 minutes to the break? Oh my gosh. See, this is the fun of the show. It just goes flying by. I mean, NIMBY as like nothing built. Again, nuances. Usually it becomes a negotiation of like, okay, we're going to put 1,500 units here. No, I don't want 1,500 units. Okay, well, the community objects. So how about 1,100 units?
Yeah. Everything's just gotten stopped. Most things have gotten stopped. And then nothing happens. And then we're really hurting. So it's really trying to, I think there's some density, transient-oriented corridor development, infill is important. Protecting, and what we have done in the greater Bay Area is protect our green belt and work towards that. And people did that, and you keep large open spaces and contiguous connected areas for nature, wildlife, habitat, watersheds, and then you have people living in more dense transit-oriented corridors.
So if we had light rail, or we had a BART extension, or we could expand Highway 1, or we had more than two ways off the coast side from Pacific, there's only two ways out of Pacific.
I agree that the emergency side is huge, and I'm going to throw something really into, I was just thinking about this. Do you know about the 380, what 380 was supposed to do?
It's supposed to come over the Montara Mountain?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, over Sweeney Ridge into Pacifica.
Yes.
And so anyway, there's fascinating history about like what if we had done that. I mean, it was crazy, but the difference is the choices we make and then the balance between having this huge pipe and having a dangerously tiny pipe for transit.
Right. I mean, if you build it, they will come.
And it's yeah. So it's a tough, great debate.
Okay, 2 minutes to go. Yes, I mean, it is a tough debate, and I do think that Pacifica, I mean, part of the debate that we don't have time for here, but that I guess I would question is the whole idea that you must grow to survive. This is a capitalistic viewpoint of which, like, at some point, you cannot continue to grow. Like, you have to figure out how to be able to be sustainable without ever expansive growth. And I think Pacifica is a great example. And we've talked about it here on the coast side. Communities are not self-sustainable anymore. People are driving over the hill to go grocery shopping, or get, you can't buy a musical instrument here on the coast side. You can't buy sporting goods. You know, there's not a shoe store here on the coast side. Things like that, that if that is the kind of development, but adding just homes, adding thousands and thousands and thousands of homes and people, when we don't have the schools, when we don't have the roads, we don't even have the businesses to support that, that to me is not self-sustainable, and that is adding to what's going to be extra pollution with all the people waiting in traffic, and just a nightmare of how are you going to get out of Pacifica or Montero.
Multi-use, for sure. Not just housing. Multi-use. I think we have some agreement on some things here.
Oh, I'm sure. of course we do. We got to go to commercial break. When we come right back, a couple of emails, and then we're going to get into a back-and-forth, full-fledged, official, formal interview with Mike Kahn of Explore Local Nature. We'll be right back.
This is Community Radio for the Coast Side. 100.9 KHMB. Coastal Windage is brought to you by Cameron's Restaurant and Pub in Half Moon Bay. Come for the food, stay for the fun. That's Cameron's Restaurant and Pub on Highway 1 in Half Moon Bay.
This is Jay Michaels. Make sure to join me and Stan Warren Luttrell coming up at 10 o'clock right after Coastal Windage. We'll have a look at today in history, plus we'll get to a brand new forgotten find. It all happens at 10 a.m. right here from 100.9 FM KHMB.
Okay, and we're back. I'm going to cut 2 minutes into this because I just want to finish this thought on NIMBY, and then we'll move on. We'll get a couple emails and we'll get to Mike. I just want to say that people would say, well, like, okay, you live here, Ruben, so you got your house here. Now you're going to, you know, pull up the drawbridge and nobody else gets to come in. And I'm saying, like, well, that's – I don't necessarily equate that as a one-to-one situation. Like, development is an ongoing thing. And what Pacifica or El Granada looked like 25 years ago is not what it looks like now. So it's not just an open pipe of like, we're just going to like just keep bringing people in and you got to come in or you live here now. So then you can't say that nobody else is. I did not move here and buy an empty lot and build a house. I bought a pre-existing house that was already built. So no vacant land was torn up to build my house. And in fact, the house that I live in now, I watched that vacant lot be torn up and the house built. And I was sad when that house was built. And it's ironic that I now live here. I'm also going to say something super controversial right now, that yes, in fact, if you have lived in a place for 25 or 30 years, you do have more stake in the game than somebody that just moved here. That's right. I said it. It's called paying your dues or equity or putting in your time. If you've lived in your entire life somewhere, or you've raised your kids their entire childhood somewhere, if you've served on local government boards and committees, if you've volunteered at local nonprofits, if you've paid property taxes in a place for decades, then yes, you've put more into this community than somebody that just moved here. I'm not saying new residents to the coast side don't or shouldn't have a say. Of course they do. They're living here now. But I'm saying that calling somebody a NIMBY that's lived here for decades because they don't want an apartment complex where currently there's a grove of trees providing shelter and food for owls, hawks, butterflies, snails, rabbits, coyotes, and so on, so calling that person a NIMBY disrespects their time served in that community. If you live here on the coast side or anywhere, and you don't want a cell tower or high-density housing or an interstate highway or a parking lot or a storage yard for off-gassing propane tanks in your community, that doesn't make you a NIMBY. That makes you someone concerned about your health, your family's health, your investment in your property, and your community. All right, moving on. Two quick emails. Email from Roberto in D-flat. Quote, subject line, music to my ears. I'm really surprised that... Mike, just a heads up. The interns like to gag me by just see the mailbags or by just grabbing randomly emails out of our mail. I like to have them printed out because I pretend that they're actual mail that we got in the mail. So who knows what this is going to be? I'm reading it for the first time, and we're both hearing this for the first time. Okay, I'm really surprised that Ruben didn't harangue the orchestra lady. We had a woman from the community orchestra on last week, Sarah Lomax. Didn't harangue the orchestra lady about AI and tech for making music. Usually I switch to a podcast when he starts on the AI stump, but I was actually wondering what she might think about the future of live music. I guess that's one way to trick me into listening to the entire show. Okay. Why would I harangue a musician who plays a real instrument in a live orchestra? Like, that's, there's no, we don't need to go there. It's the, okay. Mike, if I'm accidentally insulting you, just please overlook it. It's the talentless hacks creating, quote, stunning virtuosos with GarageBand and AI that get my goat. Okay. See, I guess just get to move on. Like, people like, Nope, we're moving on. All right, this one from listener D's Yucks. Subject line, Coastal Windage Reverse Curse. I don't know if you're familiar with this, Mike. Don't let Ruben read this on air. Well, too late. I don't want it to go to his head. I'm starting to believe in his Coastal Windage Reverse Curse. Coastside Country was on the show last month, and now they're on the cover of Coastside Magazine and won first place in the Lighthouse Dance Fest. Can I be on the show? So the reverse curse is people come. So this is great for you, Mike. You've heard of the Sports Illustrated curse, right? Players would get on the cover of Sports Illustrated and then, like, the next week, like, blow out their knee and their career's over. Like, it's like you don't want to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Uh-huh. It's the opposite here. We have people come on this show and their careers just take off. So explore local.
I love it.
Be ready. Be ready. Explore local nature is about to just explode.
It.
Okay, that's what we do here on the show. Here we go. Here's our Shooting the Breeze live interview with Mike Kahn, founder and CEO of the outdoor recreation website app, Explore Local Nature. Mike is a Pacifica local and who feels that the best adventures often start right in back your own backyard. Okay, Mike, what's your story? Are you a Coastside native? How are we so lucky to have you in our community?
I'm a newbie from the perspective. It's been over 6 years that I've lived in Pacifica. I lived just over the hill in San Bruno for many years, and then Millbrae. And I was born and raised in the bubble of Palo Alto.
Where?
Palo Alto.
Oh, okay. Palo Alto.
Winner, winner. Do I win?
No. We got to put a disclaimer. The guests in the studio are not eligible.
Too late.
Okay. Okay. How did you worked your way up and over then?
Up and over.
Yeah.
My now wife was living up on the peninsula, and so that brought me up. And also there's an affordability issue. The same house is like 3 or 4 times more expensive down in the South Bay.
Yes. I mean, Pacifica has long been a little hidden pocket of affordability and kind of like regular life here on the mm-hmm. coast side, which is one thing I love about it, one thing that worries me as we talk about all the developments coming there. So mm-hmm. you have 25 years, excuse me, in conservation and communications, and reading from your materials. 25 years ago, you dipped your bike tires in the Pacific right here in Half Moon Bay before embarking on a 5,000-mile bike ride to Maine by yourself. What?
Yeah.
So tell us about this.
I call it a self-induced rite of passage, kind of building on and talking about growing up in Palo Alto, being in this tech hub early, late 90s, getting more interested in the environment and sustainability myself, and also having seen some of the world. I got to do some, was blessed to be able to do some travel and study in Europe, and hadn't experienced in the country. I was here and grew up in, I call it a bubble, but really seeing, wanting to experience things. And also I was already, my first job was at the Environmental Volunteers in Palo Alto. I became the default techie, rebuilt their website, got into, basically tech for good, tech for nature and outdoors. And that's been a real thread. But I decided, I read the book, Paulo Coelho's The Alchemist, and that kind of got me thinking about what is my legend, or what is my mission? What am I seeking to do? And I got it in my head. I want to experience the country. And I had to do it as wanted a bike. I wanted to do it as an educational project. So I got a small laptop, digital camera, 2 megapixels at the time. Had solar panels on my panniers, a 9-pound motorcycle battery to charge everything, and was basically, you know, before digital nomad was a thing, was out doing basically riding, but also doing nature photography, showing what I saw, and then also connecting actually with organizations, including like Save Our Shores, who I met out here on the coast. On my first day, like from Palo Alto over the hill here, camped at Half Moon Bay State Beach, and then met up with them. And so really nature education, but so tech for good. That's like been so core in my, like, what do I do? I was born here. What do I do with this? And that's like been what I've been trying to figure out my whole life.
What year was this that you did this ride?
2000. So this,
I mean, 2000, yeah. People... especially younger people listening to this are like, I mean, okay, you know, he's posting. And the 2000, just taking a lap, that laptop probably weighed 7 pounds, right?
Luckily, actually, I got some, it was expensive, a Sony Vaio. It was the tiniest thing you could ever imagine. I think I still have it in the closet. So luckily, I did have some smaller equipment. So,
but even posting, I mean, like the internet in 2000 was not what it is today.
Yeah, I was doing Dreamweaver. I did my own HTML, basically, you know, typing in. It was WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. It was already easier at the time. I'm not a full programmer or anything, but doing all the processing, you know, the photos and posting things and slow.
I mean, that's pretty. That's early. I mean, in the people now like just take it for granted, but in 2000 that was really. Here we are at Monarch Pass on the bike. What kind of bike was that?
Mike, you look so I'm showing him a picture for those who can't see. Showing him a picture. So this is crossing the Continental Divide at Monarch Pass over 11,000 feet, and it was about 80 pounds of gear on my bike. Front and back pannier. So it's like an 18 wheeler trucker, but you go and you just keep going. And it's a great way. You can stop anywhere you want and just pull over, take photos, you know, experience it, talk to people. It's an amazing way. You're outside the, talk about everybody driving, just getting out.
How long did that take you?
I took my time. I took 3.5 months.
Wow.
You can do it a lot faster, but I wasn't there about speed.
Right, and you're going to miss some stuff. Well, we had a friend of the show, Ranger Kelak, who's been on the show. He has walked across America to raise money. And
that's
again,
amazing.
Like I'm just in awe of the endurance that it takes mentally and physically to stay with that. Okay, let's get into explore local nature, because this is really what you've poured your life into right now. Financially, mentally, emotionally, intellectually, aesthetically.
Mm-hmm.
So, website, guide, portal, app, product. What is this thing?
Yeah. So, explorelocalnature.com is the site, and what it is a one-stop shop aggregating all of the nature and outdoor recreation events and activities, and the organizations in a particular area, and that starting with San Mateo County. And this is the starting, this is the beta site, but the real premise is that the whole industry is super fragmented. Every open space agency, nonprofit, business, everybody doing an event or doing part of the conservation movement or nature has their own stuff. They push it out and, you know, want to just attract people to what they're doing. But from a user perspective, for a nature enthusiast, you want to know everything that's going on, and you know there's a FOMO fear of missing out. So having a one-stop shop brings all together to allow for enthusiasts to know everything going on, whether that's all the guided hikes, nature walks, restoration activities, volunteer activities, talks and webinars, surf contests, mountain bike rides, plein air artist painting. There's just something for everybody, but it's all over the place. So bringing that together is powerful for the enthusiast, but it's also the opportunity for all of those people experiencing nature deficit disorder who haven't been out, who don't know what to do, can come in and go, oh my gosh, the world is my oyster. Like, find something that's near them, attracts them, feels right for them, is an organization, their peeps, their community, and makes it easy to get outdoors and get involved and get into nature.
So that's where I wasn't clear, because I had read in on the website about events, mm-hmm. but I came to know you and Explore Local Nature through the discussion of Brooks Falls and right. and your guides,
right?
Which, and that's what I thought. Explore Local. It was it was a set of guides, but I kept seeing this word events, and that's mm-hmm. what you're talking about, is things happening at these sites.
Yeah, the events is the first principle. It's a area that I saw that was not being tackled, and I also saw that technology had a real valuable potential with AI to be able to do things that were otherwise impossible or would fall apart or be too expensive, mm-hmm. to be able to help aggregate this information on an ongoing basis, to categorize it, standardize it, bring it in from different sources, and serve it up to people in a really powerful way. But the events and the organization is just the start. So you got the events, you have the places, and you have the news and information. So this is a real whole, called the vertical of nature space. It's kind of a Craigslist and Nextdoor of nature, and a Netflix of nature, someone called it.
Okay.
But you're trying to connect people to the outdoors, but to make it, just having this powerful site. Also, just with AI, you have the ability to, and we don't have this right now, but to communicate with people in different languages. So if someone, whatever their language background is, could interact and say, hey, what are you looking to do this weekend? And go, well, I have two young kids. I haven't been out before. Don't know what to do. And it's like, oh, and it pops up. Oh, here are two local events, kid-friendly. Here are two short hikes that you can do. Oh, do you know what poison oak looks like? Do you know what ticks are? Pack your trash. Like, you can have. There are amazing things that I want to do with this site. This is just like the beginning and starting with something that I thought was to see how it would resonate with people and to do this startup.
So this is where the AI comes in. Is because the question I was going to ask you is like, well, where do you get all the information? How do you gather it? Mm-hmm. How much staff do you have? Well, this is your staff is AI.
That's part of it for sure. Right now, there is manual stuff that is not fully automated. Some of it, I've had some tech challenges with just what I've gotten into, but in the short run. But basically, the opportunity is to automatically aggregate this information from targeted sources. There's different ways to source things. But it's not just AI. You want to do things as efficiently as possible. There's a lot of things to standardize that you don't need AI for. But to process that information and so, this is a mountain bike ride. This is free. This is paid. This is waitlisted. There's a lot that you can do with this artificial intelligence.
So Explore Local Nature, to access this information and these resources, what's the business model? How do you make, is this free? Do you have to sign up? Do you have to have a monthly
subscription?
Thank you. That's exactly the word I was looking for. Using a subscription model these days. Is that what Explore Local Nature has?
So I'm exploring with the business model, and honestly, I'm looking for support and people to work on this with me, or to be sponsors, partners, collaborators. I have looked at the corporate sponsorship model, or just sponsorship, and the San Mateo County Parks Foundation came on board early on as an initial supporter, sponsor, and so really trying to get outside funding and basically having a keep trying it, want to keep it free for people, or at least have like the free version. And then there could be freemium stuff in the future if it goes in that direction. I'm exploring everything from can it be a full software startup that goes to the moon? I think it has international potential. At the same time, funding it, like, how do I get, I jumped in some ways with ambitious visions and thinking I had more figured out than I did, to be honest. And so there's some figuring out, is this going in a nonprofit direction or hybrid, or there's a lot to be determined. And this is also the feedback stage. Bring it on. Tell me what you want, what you're looking for, what the community needs. I'm exploring things with, I'm talking to San Mateo County Education Department, like I'm talking to national nonprofits. I'm trying to figure out how we're going to do this.
How do people express that feedback to you? How can they give you that feedback or provide information to you?
Yeah, there's on explorelocalnature.com, there's at the footer of every page, there is a contact button. You can also email me, mike@explorelocalnature.com. So very easy. Just send me that information. Happy to, I'll be the one looking at it, not an AI.
Nice. Okay, good to know. So you're fully in startup mode right now. And so this is a sensitive question, but so you're in full startup mode right now. How do you keep the lights on? Like, you know, it's a non-revenue generating enterprise right now with really grand visions that I think could happen. How is this from your personal savings? You know, like, are you working a day job and doing this at night? Like, how are you making this work right now?
Over basically this past year, I have invested personal savings with the blessing, or at least the permission of my wife and agreement, you know, and she works and we're very, you know, we're in this together, but it's a calculated risk. I've been taking these types of risks all my life. I've been sacrificing a ton of revenue all my life to do the types of work I've done. But I also see I'm committed to connecting people to nature. I think it's so important for all the things that you were talking about, NIMBY issues, or to people protect what they connect to. And we need, all the amazing benefits that I get, that like people get physically, emotionally, mentally from nature. And then thinking about it, maybe I will think more sustainably about the business I'm creating or whatever I'm doing personally or professionally. And I really have that sustainability arc to it. And nature doesn't just happen. It's all these organizations, it's people doing things. And you're talking about Xerxes and groups. And so it takes a village, and I want to connect people to that village and to the real things that exist in this increasingly artificial world.
Well, the reason I asked you that question, Mike, is because in startup mode, whether it's a tech company, a nature company that involves tech, or whatever it is, you're putting a lot, you're taking a big risk, you're putting a lot out there with the hope of something. And so I just want to highlight that for people. Like, you've got a vision, you're trying to do something, it's hard, it takes a lot of courage to take that step, to put yourself in a situation where you're putting money in, not knowing whether you're going to get it back, for a life's passion and a vision, and I salute that. And I hope that people will support you, and I hope that you can get interested funders to make this happen.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. It is a leap of faith.
Yes.
I see the potential. I also see what I have. You know, I've built more than you should in kind of a lean startup model. I know things, but it's out there. It's really showing people the potential. There's a lot of good feedback. So I'm putting it out to the universe.
Okay. We've got about 5 minutes left. I've got a bazillion questions. So, Mike, we're going to have you back. So you've got so in addition to the site that kind of aggregates these events and gives people an opportunity to search for something in their area, you've got these amazing guides for local sites of interest, let's say, points of interest. Can you tell us about a couple of these guides that you have?
So The guide started with this winter waterland, seven great creek and waterfall hikes that are in San Mateo County. So really trying to feature some amazing places that people can go. And it is also a promotional vehicle. This is part of trying to bring people in and make people aware of what I'm doing, get people on the email list. You subscribe, you get the free download of this guide, and you can find amazing places, from really places that are easy to get to more difficult spots, depending on your level of interest and abilities, and experience the amazing wonders that we have across the county.
And did you write these yourselves? Did you do all the hikes and go to all these places and gather the information?
Yes, I didn't do all of them this year. Some of them is coming from past. Yep. that I've done, but really compiling it with all of my information, and then also going out and checking with people, making sure some of the resources were right and what not to feature if something is, you know, under construction or having issues. And I discovered some new spots. I'm a user. That's like I'm a user of Explore Local Nature. It's not just so it's for me.
I mean, that's what makes it so great, is it's something that you love in your personal life, and mm-hmm. you're figuring out a way to like bring it to other people and possibly, you know, make a living off of it too. I see you brought some materials with you. What have you got here?
Yeah, I do have the printout of the Winter Waterland Guide, and I'll just say, for that, I'd love to have people check it out. If you go to the site, you'll get it. There'll be a pop-up where you can subscribe and see that. Love your feedback. And, you know, it does feature, the first one is Brooks Falls in San Pedro Valley County Park. And it was cool to hear, like, that not everybody knew about that locally, regionally. And so it's exciting to introduce people to that. It is ephemeral, so it does shut off the spout pretty quickly after the rains. But I got out there on January 6th, literally 1 month ago, and got to see it like in its prime after we had a lot of immense rain. And it was just a spectacular experience. You wouldn't have believed that we had the storms. It was just such a nice day. And I just put up a 6-minute video showcasing the whole experience to really get that winter waterland and be prepared for, so people can go back out there when it does start to rain again.
Nice.
And there's also so many of these creeks just keep flowing. So there's a lot to just go and see right now.
What's the poster you've got here?
Yeah, this particular poster, this is Memorial Park, and it's created, so it's a project of the San Mateo County Parks Foundation, a sponsor of ours, but the cool thing is they have a contest that is, you can submit, if you're an artist, they're making posters of all of the different county parks, three at a time, and they've done 6 of these posters. And so they're all by local artists. You can be anywhere in the basically 10 county area, Bay Area and Santa Cruz counties. So if you live, I think, you know, in those areas. And right now, the contest is open to design the park posters for three of the county parks. And one of them is Devil's Slide.
Ooh.
So through March 2nd, if you're a local artist, you can apply. You do have to, you know, dig in and research and submit a good proposal. But you also, this isn't just something you're giving away. You get a $2,500 commission if you are selected to do this.
One sec, Mike. Paging Julie Engelman.
Julie.
If you're listening, so Julie did the mural on the Cunha General Store here at Kelly in Maine. She also did the mural on the IDS Hall and several murals in Pacifica, including the poster for Fogfest 2 years ago, which was an amazing poster.
Nice.
Julie, you want to do this? Devil's Slide is up for grabs right now. Okay, go ahead, Mike.
So I just wanted to put it out there. It's like an amazing way to connect to nature, to art, and also, you know, hopefully make some money and grow your career. Just put it out there and have an amazing poster. And that's, yeah.
I love this. This is a great heat. So Mike has brought in the poster for Memorial Park. It's really striking. And it reminds me, maybe you've seen these. there's a guy like Ranger Doug, I think, is a brand that has been recreating WPA posters from the Depression era of the national parks in this kind of format that have that kind of striking WPA Depression era artwork, celebrating the national parks. My sister has dozens of these. And this is in that vein. And frankly, personally, as a person that loves graphics, I would love to have a poster of all of the if the county park or County Parks Foundation is doing a poster for every park. I want every poster. That's all a great fundraiser, a great way to get the community involved.
Yeah, you can go to their store right now and get all the six that that exist. So they're selling them. They got stickers now too, and it's a great way to celebrate the parks. They are in different styles, different artists, but it really is about showcasing the amazing things that are all in these different parks. Fitzgerald Marine Preserve has already been done, so you can check that one out. So I don't have that here today. So it's amazing. It's connecting us to place and also artists.
What about Explore Local Nature swag? You have any of that?
I've got stickers right now.
Nice.
And
let's see that sticker. Okay, great. Get these out there.
And I guess I'll say if people submit their comments, there's a survey, and they can win either. I got some shirts, or they can win one of these posters.
Great. Okay. I'm getting the whirly bird, which means somehow we're already out of time. Mike, we barely scratched the surface, which means we'll be having you back if you've got time. I know you're busy with your Explore Local Nature.
I'd love to be back.
Great. Awesome. Thank you, Mike. Really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you. Good luck
on this. Love it. Love it.
Appreciate it.
So we'll be back next week with our last show in the Coastal Windage Studios. Crystalline will be back, and we'll have Melinda McNaughton from Xerxes Foundation to continue our discussion of nature and its value to the coastside. See you next week, Coastsiders. This has been Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast.